this year has seen a mass movement of millions of ordinary people sweep the United States of America in opposition to police racism and brutality, with solidarity protests echoing the sentiments of Black Lives Matter the world over. This mass struggle has really brought to the fore debates around the role that the police play in society and questions around what we should do about the police, to defund them or abolish them completely. I think to start to answer these questions, we need to understand the institution of the police and why they behave in such a violent, racist and oppressive way. And in order to do this, I think we really need to understand them as a product of capitalism and class society. Their entire purpose and function is serving as an armed, repressive force which is able to maintain the status quo in a vastly unequal society. Their role is not, as is commonly argued, to solve and prevent crime, and I'll go into some evidence for this later on in the talk. Rather, they play no useful role to society, to everyone that is not the capitalist class. I'm going to prosecute the argument that the goal of socialists should ultimately be the abolition of the police and all of the institutions that go along with them. Due to their importance to the maintenance of capitalism, this task is inseparable from the goal of ultimately getting rid of capitalism altogether. I'm going to start off by talking about the origins of the police force, as this illuminates further the social role of this institution, one that it has been designed to play since its inception. In Australia, the establishment of the First Night Watch, which was a predecessor of the police force, was in Sydney in 1789. The first colonial cops were ironically convicts themselves. Today, on their website, the New South Wales Police write that these men were drawn from the ranks of the best behaved of the convicts. Translated, this means the most self-interested, sycophantic and scabious layer of the convicts. The role that these convicts played was to dob in anyone not following the rules laid down by the Tory governors, such as anyone absconding from the forced labour routine they were transported to endure, or anyone trying to steal an extra bite to eat on top of their measly rations. Watkin Tench, an officer of the 1st Fleet Marines, explained their purpose in his journal, which is, for quote, the preservation of public and private property. This was the first system of the police in the colony, end quote. They also played a role in uncovering and informing on any potential rebels. These early cops were a crucial part of the establishment of capitalism in Australia through helping to establish private property rights, informing on those who had a rightful sense of rebellion to the existing colonial order. And at times, this force was even actively used to carry out brutal torture of those who broke the rules. The first iteration of the modern police force, which looks a lot more like the police we know and hate today, was in England, coming out of a period which corresponds to the development of large urban cities. As capitalism developed large industry, masses of former peasants were displaced from their land and forced to migrate to newly developing cities to look for work, to earn a living in factories to survive. This very quickly became a volatile situation for the ruling class. They were a minority owning class, vastly outnumbered by the thousands of workers brought together by the experience of labouring for minimal wages in terrible conditions, becoming very quickly a tinderbox for class struggle. During these early years of urban life, there were numerous uprisings, rebellions and strikes. And while the ruling classes did not have the military, did have the military to crack down and suppress class struggle, there were limitations to this. Troops would often develop sympathies with the popular discontent, being badly paid and often disciplined by flogging themselves. They would disaffect and refuse to act to repress the struggle. There was also a further tactical problem in that the massive demonstrations which took place in the first half of the 19th century, there could be like hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. And these soldiers were trained to respond to situations by killing. Killing protesters in such situations would often have the opposite to desired effect and enrage participants even more and could potentially spark insurrection. Edwin Chadwick, a social reformer who was regarded as the zealous engineer of the industrialists, argued for a different approach, a new force of armed men with batons instead of guns that could be created, which would exercise punishment through violent repression without providing martyrs to inflame working class anger. And they could use the tactic of arresting the ringleaders only. Despite some initial qualms that the ruling class held, they were soon won over when it became clear that an efficient police force could be used to undermine the efforts of striking workers through the protection of scab labour. As manufacturer Thomas Ashton from Hyde conveyed to the Royal Commission on Policing, in the case of turnouts, it would be desirable to have a force of people to protect those that are willing to work. Following this, the Metropolitan Police Bill of 1829 went through British Parliament with little opposition. So this kind of facilitated the initial creation of the police force. This police force was created specifically to protect the interests of the capitalist class against a powerful, newly developed working class, in which was beginning to participate in class struggle, to fight for democratic rights and better conditions for themselves in the workplace. As Engels wrote, because the English bourgeois finds himself reproduced in the law, the policeman's truncheon, which in certain measure is his own club, for him has a wonderfully soothing power, but for the working man, quite the opposite. In the American South, going to another part of the globe, there was another institution that predated and would later be transformed into the police, the slave patrol. This was a group of vigilante citizens who were hired by plantation owners and supplied their own weapons. As they became more routine due to increased numbers of slaves, they became loosely under the control of the local courts and militias. The urbanisation which began to occur in southern cities consolidated enslaved populations, meaning that people were working together more closely than they had been on plantations, and thus making it easier to organise and rebel. So the threat of slave rebellion became more pronounced and more difficult for the ruling class in America to keep under control. They began to combat this, they began implementing curfews specifically on the black population, both free and enslaved, in an attempt to hamper the organisation of these rebellions. A new force was required to enforce this, which was more permanent and central than the previous patrols. In the urban cities, in the northern states of America, much like in England, the working class had been engaged in strikes and rebellions. So all of this kind of meant that a new institution in America was also required to meet the new social conditions of crowds and struggle which had developed with the growth of capitalism. What the capitalist class required was a full-time permanent force capable of continuously asserting the power of the capitalist state up and down every street and in every city. This new force was then assembled through a process of trial and error, building on existing institutions such as the slave patrol in the South, and fused into a new body of armed men to carry out the two main tasks. The first of which to patrol working class neighborhoods using the threat of armed force to keep people compliant and protect private property. And of course, within this, there was a specific focus on black and brown populations. And two, to control crowds, to make sure that when people tried to strike or demonstrate, they would break it down and quell dissent. As Marx says, all history is the history of class struggle, and the creation of the police the world over was a conscious intervention on the ruling class side of that struggle. One of the key contradictions of capitalism is that it's a necessity for the ruling class to bring together large groups of workers in the same area, collectively undergoing the experience of labouring in order to make the highest amounts of profits for the bosses possible. But this simultaneously creates the biggest threat to the ruling class. As the rule of the capitalist class, because they have inadvertently brought together a class of people and through forcing them to labour collectively, given them the capability and the interest to fight back against the ruling class and, at the highest point of their struggle, get rid of capitalism and class society altogether. The role of the police is to manage this contradiction on the behalf of the ruling class since its inception and going through until today. Because of this, the ruling class is wholly reliant on the capitalist state and the repressive apparatuses at its disposal. So this is the courts and the military as well as the police. I think this is really illustrated in the billions and billions of dollars that are poured into these institutions. In the US, the New York City Police Department budget, which is the biggest in the country, is $5 billion US dollars, which is more than the combined budgets for the Department of Health, the Department of Homeless Services, the Department of Housing Prevention and Development, and the Department of Youth and Community Development. Chicago City's budget for the police in 2020 allocated $1.78 billion to the police, which was increased by $121.5 million from the previous year's budget. In stark contrast, the city's Office of Police Accountability received just $13.9 million. So the increase in the police budget alone is greater than the entirety of the budget of this office. So it shows how, how not unserious their attitude actually is to, police accountability. In Australia, it's a similarly gross story. The Victorian police budget has nearly doubled in the past decade, from $1.9 billion Australian dollars in 2009 to $3.6 billion in 2020. This in real terms amounts to a 54% increase. In New South Wales, over the same period, the police budget rose from $2.5 billion to $3.8, an increase of 23% in real terms. These budget increases come with an ever-expanding range of supposedly non-lethal weapons, which can be used for crowd control and the like. And I think it's really important to say that this increase in resources directed towards the police is not the result of increased crime rates, as the hysteria often whipped up around law and order would have us believe. In the US, crime rates have been declining for decades. According to the US Bureau of Statistics, there has been a 71% drop in violent crime and a 69% drop in property crime between the 1990s and 2018. In Australia, the rate of homicide has also declined drastically from 2.2 people to every 100,000 in 1990 to now being 0.8 people per every 100,000. Rates in other types of crime have kind of fluctuated, but the overall trend is also down here as well. I think it's kind of useful here to talk further about the myth of police existing to prevent crimes. Fighting crime has virtually nothing to do with the police, even by design. In Boston, where the first police force in America was created, crime went down in the decade before the creation of the department. The role of detectives, the person that's kind of seen as the one who's like meant to like do all the work with the little magnifying glass to solve crimes, didn't even exist in America for the first 50 to 70 years of the police force's existence. It wasn't something that was even considered by the originators of these institutions. It has simply become a useful justification for the existence of the police and has led to them being seen as a social necessity in a common sense understanding. So I think it's worth explaining this and going into this further. The main mechanism through which crimes are reported and solved from the inception of the police up to today is through witness reports. It's not the case that it actually takes a massively armed force of people with undue control over the population for this to be carried out. Like, this can be quite easily done, like, you know, through social organising of people themselves. The overwhelming majority of arrests are for minor drug offences and so-called quality of life offences, such as public drunkenness, vagrancy, public urination and other such things. In America, the majority of policemen make only one felony arrest per year, and the majority of their time is actually just spent on patrol. So the commonly held ideas about what police officers do all day is actually a total falsehood. Additionally, the police are not a preventative measure against crimes occurring, there is no statistical correlations between the size of a police force and the reduction in crime rates. In fact, it can often be the case that places that have over time developed a larger police force have higher rates of crime. I think a really good example of this is for a period of time, the New York City Police Department stopped carrying out necessary arrests. Yeah, I think the idea that there's even unnecessary arrests that get carried out is pretty alarming. But they stopped carrying out these quote-unquote necessary arrests as a form of strike action, which was really more like a tantrum when the New York City mayor mildly criticised them for the death of Eric Garner. During this period, of course, arrests for minor offences didn't happen at all, and unsurprisingly, nothing changed. New York didn't fall into a state of anarchy, imitating the popular movie The Purge. On top of that, researchers found that the reporting of major crimes, such as felony, robbery, and murder, as well as assaults, fell by half during the slowdown. And to be clear, that's not the amount of crime investigated, but actually the number of the complaints that the police received. So we've established that the cops are bad at solving crime and preventing them. And I think even with this qualifier in understanding the role of the police and the repressive institutions they uphold, I think it's worth taking a critical look at what is even classified as crime in the first place. Laws are not actually the framework on which society operates. Laws are the product of how our society operates. And it's for this very reason that vandalism and littering are policed. Meanwhile, corporations are free to make trillions of dollars off of the polluting and ravaging of the earth. It's for this very reason that things that are carried out by people in order to survive, such as theft, street trade, and squatting, are thought of as crime and punished. Yet the grotesque inequality that forces people into these situations, such by denying them basic necessities such as food and shelter, are actually just part of the system functioning exactly as it was built to. I think this point is also extremely important when we look at the way in which crime is racialised. Indigenous people in Australia face massive amounts of over-policing. They're 15 times more likely to be in prison than non-Indigenous people. In recent years, the Sydney's community has faced a campaign of vilification and harassment by the police, calling them violent gang members. And these are just like, you know, groups of teenagers hanging out on the streets, being slandered as gangs. And young Muslim men have been put in prison for thought crimes as a result of the war on terror. People from these groups face constant over-policing and are arrested for crimes that white people wouldn't be despite equal rates of offending. Racism is the product of capitalism that the ruling class relies on. I think in order to illustrate this a bit more, it's worth looking at the example of Indigenous people in Australia. The development of capitalism here has relied totally on the denial of their humanity and sovereignty and the brutal genocide of First Nations people so that Australian capitalism could expand totally unhindered. These acts were justified by developing anti-Indigenous racism, which is still a necessity for Australian capitalism today, in order to continually undermine Indigenous land rights. So the police replicate and reinforce all of the most oppressive ideas of the ruling class relies on in order to keep their system functioning. Of course, this also means taking up the appalling racism of capitalist society. So we've established that the history of the police, what the history of the police is and the appalling social role that they play, but what should we do about them? First of all, it's important that we establish that the police cannot somehow be won over and brought to the working class side of the struggle, which is the position that some people have. The way socialists should understand the class nature of the police is really summed up well in this quote by Leon Trotsky. The worker who became a policeman in service of the capitalist state is not a worker, but a bourgeois cop. We should see them as a separate social class that has inherently counterposed interests to that of the working class. The majority of people in the police do come from working class backgrounds, and the police also work for a wage. And there's certain conditions of the job, such as long hours, which carry kind of semblances of working class characteristics. But I think that doesn't actually change the nature of the police. And I think to understand the social class of the police, we have to understand that class isn't just some abstract thing with like a list of things that you tick the boxes and that's what class you're assigned to. It's about one's relationship with the means of production and one's relationship with how society works, as well as the other classes in society. For the police, as we've established, their social relationship and their function is solely to serve as a repressive apparatus for the capitalists. As a class, their interests are never aligned with those of working class people. They spend their working lives violently enforcing the law on working class and oppressed people. I think understanding this goes to explaining why we can't reform the institution of the police so that it's no longer the violent and racist oppressive institution that we know today. There are those who argue that we simply need to change the culture of the police force. Like maybe we just put everyone in the police through enough cultural sensitivity training and they'll become less racist and less violently oppressive. But the culture of the police doesn't just come from the ideas in the heads of individual cops. It comes from the material reality based in their social relations. And cultural sensitivity training does nothing to actually change this material reality, which, as we've established, is one of upholding capitalism and class rule, which relies on racism. So I think we have to see the abolition of the police as the only solution to the problem of the police. This flows from the understanding that is rooted in the historic origins and the current role that they play as a tool for class rule and for the bosses. So through the threat of violence, the police protect private property and quell working class resistance to the status quo. The cops have no social use except as an oppressive organisation to be utilised by the ruling class. But what does abolishing the police actually mean? The Black Lives Matter movement this year has brought this phrase into popular discourse, which is a really positive development. However, it's often not totally clear what people mean when they're talking about this. Some people use police abolition to mean simply defunding the police. And while this is certainly a short-term goal and worth fighting for, this does not go far enough. Others also use it to mean the idea of replacing the roles that police play with social workers and healthcare workers who are trained in situational de-escalation and who can deal with social problems instead of the police. I think it would undoubtedly be better if nurses were responsible for performing mental health checks rather than armed policemen, but I think this doesn't get to the root of the problem, and ultimately I don't think it would be possible to get that under capitalism. As long as capitalism exists, the police force will not be abolished in any sense or reduced at all. Capitalism is based on inequality and an exploitation that relies on violent repression in order to keep the oppressed in line. Really abolishing the police would mean workers dealing with the problems in our community in a manner that we decide is appropriate. This would necessitate the working class being organised and empowered to settle any disputes or issues collectively. And this is fundamentally incompatible with capitalism. This will only be possible when the working class has overthrown the capitalist system and has begun to organise a society based on human need, rather than a society organised around the creation of profit by the exploitation of the ruling class. The militarisation, racism and generally oppressive nature of the police is a symptom of a society which is fundamentally based on inequality and oppression. And our task is to fight for it to be overthrown through mass democratic revolution and then to reconstruct that society based on collective cooperation in order to make the unnecessary gang violence that we call law enforcement absolutely obsolete. And I'll leave that.